meeting for 2018, and the last meeting for this term. The apologies we have is Honourable Killian, as you know, has undergone an operation, and we wish her well in her recovery. And then Honourable Mkunu sent an apology, and who was the other apology? Mkunu, Killian? And Nola Chung sent an apology. The rest of the agenda, honourable members. Outstanding minutes and reports that we have. But a letter from the public protector was also referred to us late yesterday. So I will speak to that matter later on. And I've asked the department DG to see if he's available to come and clarify some matters. As well as Parliament's legal people to clarify some matters for us in order for us to see how we process the matters. That's the agenda, honourable members. Do you wish to add anything further other than closure? There being none, I am going to start with the minutes. The minutes start with the 1st of August, and most of the minutes thereafter all relate, honourable members, with the passage of the National Qualifications Framework, the Amendment Bill. Starts with the 1st of August. And then we go to the month of September, October, November. And then we have a draft report of the international trip. May I hear the members on the 1st of August?
I propose.
There's a proposal to adopt the minutes of the 1st of August. Honourable Van der Westhuizen seconds that minute, and Honourable Mabunda third the minutes. I'll now go to the 5th of September. Minutes deals with the same matter. Honourable Kekana proposed adoption of that minute. And Honourable and Lobo seconds the minute. Is there anyone unhappy with it? I see none. I go to the 11th of October in the year 2018. It's the same agenda matter. Honourable Kekana proposed the minute of the 11th of October 2018. And Honourable Bulmeran seconds. Is there anyone unhappy? I see none. minute of the 24th of October in the year 2018 dealing with the same matter. Honorable Mavunda, move for the adoption by Honorable Mavunda and Honorable on that one. The first page.
Yeah. This is 24th of October.
That's correct.
D. Bundy contains the driver and the parliamentary system stock.
Yes, do you know? You remember Bundy stood in for Mampacho?
Well,
yeah. And then there was a mover and there's a seconder. Honorable Ndlovu, I don't see anyone being unhappy. I now go to the 30th of October in the year 2018, dealing with the same matter. Honorable Wolmerand moves. See a seconder.
Aye, so.
Honorable Bazoli second. Thank you. I go to the 7th of November 2018 dealing with the same matter. Did I miss something? I'll come back to 31 October. How come I don't have it? Oh, there it is then, at the back. 31 October 1st. Honorable Kekana moves the minute, and I don't see a seconder. Honorable Bazoli, is no one unhappy about the minute? No? I then go to the 7th of November. Mavunda moves, and Lobo second the minute. Except Honorable Ndlovu, I don't see you were present. Where? Oh, there, your man. Okay. Good. And then, what was that? We had a move and a seconder. Right. The 8th of November. Honorable Bazoli moved and seconded by Honorable Olmeram. Are you unhappy about the minutes, Honorable Mavunda?
No, I thought I was
okay. Honorable Bazoli was faster than you, sorry. Okay, the 14th of November in the year 2018. Yes.
The last page, please.
The last page, three.
The last paragraph of the top of the page. Three paragraphs. VA members require an elected submit. Their own amended bill. No, that is not what we require. We require an elected submit a minority report.
Yeah, that's correct.
The chairperson informed them there was no provision for that in the law. However, the rules for minority should must be reported to the court. The case should have must.
Now, I think what we should just say, we should. Hold on. Just hold on. I think what we must say there, the proper reflection must be, you did not inquire that, you did not inquire your own amended bill, or we correct that one. And then I think the rest of the sentence must reflect the way the rule says.
And it says must.
And then the rule must be mentioned there and so on. It must be reflected like that.
Yes. Chair, we were actually using the wrong rule as we would have written yesterday. We were using the rule that applies to normal meetings, whereas in fact the rule 288, I think it is, that applies to meetings around the floor.
So that's why I'm saying the sentence must reflect the way we have discussed it, and that's why I'm saying the rule.
And that was that particular rule, the 188.
We'll have it. We'll correct it in terms of what the rules say.
Next year we'll
correct. Okay. We'll wait for another call. And then on that basis you move the minute. And then Anubakekana seconds you. We are now on the 15th of November. We are still dealing with the same subject matter. Honourable Wolmerans move and Honourable Kekana second. There's no one unhappy. The minutes of the 21st of November. In the year 2018, we're now dealing with the HRDC, not qualification framework anymore. Is this a true reflection on the Bomorant? Yes? Okay. So Honourable Bomorant move. As a true reflection, and Honourable Mabunda agrees, and second, Honourable Bazoli and his
Achim. Okay. Okay. Okay.
No, it's fine. I mean, we remember the rule that we use. Don't worry, we. You will see it, Honourable members, in the other reports also. Remember, we've adopted those reports, and in those reports, we quoted the exact. Yeah. So we're done with the 21st of November, and we're now on the 27th of November. That's the last minute. Is that correct? Where we dealt with NASA's matter. On the Kekana. Proposes that we deal with that, that we move that, and the Honourable second. Now, Honourable Members, we have a little page here. The page, the heading of the page is called Matters Arising from the Minutes. I asked, have you been able to read through it? No?
Thank you.
the call for public submission. There's nothing really arising out of that because they all flew in. They all flew into the deliberations on the amendment bill. And then on the 5th of September, what we are saying is, again, it deals with the amendment bill. There's nothing on the 11th of October, so I'm saying from the 1st onwards, they all deal with the bill. And then from the 31st of October, we are still awaiting a response from the department on the gender-based violence report. So we must get the department to come back to us still on that. The committee resolved to confer with the portfolio committee. We've done that. I think the addition there is they were busy with legislation also, and we made some input into the legislation because it related to the matter of the police committee. And then 6.3 says the department was requested to provide the committee with an update with respect to the instability at the higher education and in the higher education as it relates to the TIVET. We await a response from the department. The committee agreed to include in its program an oversight visit to the institutions that experience instability. That will be dealt with in the next term. And then on AXA, you would remember they didn't report. AXA was invited to the meeting on the 27th of, but they indicated that they were not ready with the information. And so we've agreed that we will follow up on this matter in the first term of 2019. We agreed to discuss the matter of maths and science with, in a joint meeting with BASIC next year. And then on NASFIS, we agreed that NASFIS administrators should provide an update on actions taken against the former and current employee. And that occurred already because they were at a meeting with us. We have no matters arising the minutes of the 7th. The 8th, it's still the bowl.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where when you think we agree to a joint meeting, matters arising agree to a joint meeting, to discuss matters, and can I add another? The one that says in the last presentation we did, it was said that the department says discussions are on to discuss with basic education about a two-stream educational system at the level of basic education. The educational or academic and the technical and vocational issues, that's there. So those discussions to change the curriculum right at basic education to include technical and vocational, so that by the time children have chosen the stream or the line they are following according to their talent, by the time they finish something, at least they go to college to specialize. It was already said there that the discussions are on, just to hear at our level how far the discussions are. I think it is just to put emphasis on this thing of technical and vocational reading to produce more skills. Can we include it here, or you don't like it?
What we said in the entire minute. The committee should convene a joint meeting for following session to discuss the teaching of Western science in the schooling system as a method of my concern was raised about the ineffective communication between these two committees adding to the matter. I think this matter arose with Honorable Pozzoli saying that there was a meeting between the two. And that's really how the matter came. That's how the matter came about. In that context, you might want to elaborate on. It's not really matters arising from it. It is a point that we can take in, a fresh point, if I can call it like that, and say that we should consider what you have said. When we meet with them, we must consider that point. Yeah. All right.
Thanks for being so kind.
It is my job. Yes. Don't take it in the way that you think you can. Take it. So where are we now? The 15th of November there was nothing. The 21st of November, committee requested was the department was requested to submit the CETA landscape document. The department was.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a word missing. The department was made about this request. It's not correct. The department was informed about it. The committee agreed to defer the consideration of the minutes. This is what we have done now. The 27th, the department and NASFAS were requested to submit written response to the questions that were responded to the meeting. NASFAS has submitted its written responses. We are still awaiting the department. Honourable members, did we capture the matters arising? Are we satisfied with that matters arising? Then I move offer. Thank you, Admiral Bomerans and Kekana. I now go to honourable members. I don't know. My view is we have a report on the international trip that we did. Now, I don't know, man. My view is this thing that we have another report on the public hearings is something that I really don't understand why Parliament wants us to double. And I can tell you I am having a big fight about the fact that they want us to triple, double, whatever. And my view is we've dealt with this thing. I mean, the report has gone to the National Assembly already. Good. For information, it's not for you to. Good. Not for ATC. So the only report we're dealing with then is the Russian Federation from the 14th of September.
Sorry, where does the report of the public hearing go? But I've got some corrections, but they're all mine.
It's not something that's going to go into the ATC, you see. I mean, they are.
It's just really
much. It's just, look, here is the report. You can note it. You can whatever else. You know, you can move second, whatever you want. I just think it's. I don't agree with that part of Parliament, I must say. Well, that's not Parliament. It's the committee section that is forcing us to triple. adopt a report, in my view. But you can bring that, and then we can have a look at it. But my view is honourable members, you know.
Well, if it's going to be
enough is enough.
Somewhere, then maybe some corrections.
Yeah. All right, I'm in Russia now. What other reports?
I think you wish.
Okay. Okay, I'm in Cape Town talking about Russia. Is that better? Honourable members, do you need time to go through it, or are you ready? Do you need a few seconds? All right. I don't know what you are saying. Sorry? Is it ready? On the first page is the introduction. Page is the delegation. And it really just talks about, you know, when we arrived there and all of that. The third page deals with from the Monday onwards, what we did. Still deals with what the embassy told us. And then on the fifth page we start with the meeting with the ministry. Presentation from the state policy for higher education and youth policy. And then on the seventh page we deal with a meeting that we had with the vocational education. Also telling us what arose out of the meeting. On the eighth page we deal with the Rudin University. Then, honourable members, you remember we had a meeting with the Free State. Well, not Free State, I mean there was a delegation from Free State. That is captured on the ninth page. And then on the tenth page we went to the Duma. That included the meeting with the Committee on Education, or part delegation of the Committee of Education in the Duma. We then had a meeting with the Vice Rector of Rudin University. And that carries on until the 13th page. And then on on the 14th page, we had an on-site visit to the medical center, the one where we walk up and down the stairs, if you remember. And we saw all the students. And then we had a meeting with students that study at that university. Then we had a meeting on page 16 with the agency. For strategic initiatives. And then that follows to the Atlas of Emerging Jobs, the University 2035, the World Skills Russia. And then we went to the Moscow State University, where I got very beautiful flowers. And the Science and Technology University. And all of it related to that on page 19. And the national research then on page 20. And you would remember the railway one on page 21. And all the different simulations and so on they showed us. And from page 22, honorable members, are the observations that are made. From page 22 onwards. And then there's a summary on page 29 and from page 30 onwards are the recommendations. Takers on the report. Any takers on the report? The page?
Page 23. Should be able to speak on it now. Yes. Thank you, Chief. For me, the most important part of the report is the when it comes to our observations as a committee, and there are just a few. In paragraph 312, it speaks of universities also generate income third stream funding. I just think that the third stream funding is already an income, so I would propose that we scrap the word or move the word and rather say universities also generate third stream funding income.
Third stream income.
Yeah, okay. Third stream income.
Sorry, on which number are you?
C12, paragraph C12.
No, not that. First stream, second stream, third stream. That's the number that I'm. Both of you said something and then I lost it.
Third stream income would be better than income third stream.
Oh,
income.
Other than the word funding?
Yes, third stream income. So move the income.
So we changed income to the other side.
Yes, just generate right. Third stream income and its spending is governed.
Yeah. It makes better English.
The next, there's a term that appears a few times and that is...
Was your hand up, Fikana?
Huh?
Was your hand up?
No.
Oh, you were stretching your fingers.
No, I'm stretching.
There's the next paragraph where it speaks of free of charge education and then in brackets budget spaces or guarantees free of charge in brackets budget spaces education. And I was just wondering, it's not quite clear to me what it's meant if you put it in that way. And I was just wondering, I think the author might come to our assistance there.
What did you mean, Mampapa?
No, that's what they call the free of charge education. These are the spaces at universities that are funded. So not every student who goes to university is funded. They call them budget spaces. So each and every university will be given a certain number of these budget spaces that will be funded through free education or free of charge education. And then student will, as they indicated, that student will apply competitively for those budget spaces that are allocated per institution.
So she's just taken the direct words from them. Whether it makes sense in South Africa, it's neither here nor there. It's really how they...
I wonder if one shouldn't then say that this is the
which
term
is referred to as budget spaces.
Which is referred to, yes, thank you.
Okay.
And I also wonder if the more correct English wouldn't then be budgeted spaces. Budget spaces.
Yeah, that's how they call it. Kekana?
No, I don't understand. I still don't understand. What you are saying is free. Free education. Explain it. I mean, why should there be budget spaces where particular students can apply when education is free, and the criteria is there that for as long as you are below 350.
No, we're in Russia.
Oh, Russia.
page 23, do you have anything else, honorable members? No, because I'm moving to the... I'm asking any takers further on the report, something that's not clear, something that you feel needs to be included. I'm going to take you to page 28, which is the observations part.
Sorry, Chair, can I just, before we, while we're still on our observations, I'm not sure whether it is mentioned here. But what struck me was the fact that Russia, in one of our interactions, they said to us that they lost 1 million academics as a country during their transition, which negatively affected their standard. Now, I do know that in paragraph, I think it was 333 on page 25, it does speak to the fact that the inequality of education at some universities, in particular private universities, was not of good standard, perhaps was not of a good standard, but unless it's mentioned, for me, for a country to lose that number of academics is something, well, they found it necessary to mention it, and I think we need to then also acknowledge that we observed that. Is it in there?
It's, remember there's the section that where we met with the chair of the committee.
My partner will take us quickly to that. Oh, they lost a million signs. That's
and then, yes, Honourable Pekana.
Thanks for being patient with me. Mampato, if you can explain further, why if they lose 1 million, why is it that the transition would generate next generation? Just like you, in education, you teach this year, the other year, every year, I mean, there's teaching. And if they had 1 million, why wouldn't that 1 million have taught the next generation? What was the blockage then? How come there was a stoppage of losing the whole 1 million? What were they doing? Weren't they teaching the next generation of people who come to university?
Thank you. They indicated that they lost 1 million professional and research scientists to other countries. So, but that motivated them to train more. So, and they've also, you know, put in place some regulations to retain their scientists and their professionals. That is why they said they are paying, you know, all the regions, the scientists and researchers and academics at both Tibet colleges and universities are paid 200 more than the minimum wage of the region as a way of attracting them and retaining them so that they don't go. But they also indicated that some are coming back, you know, to Russia.
Any other matter under observation?
Page 27, 39. 391, where it says the country is willing to accommodate more international students to its institutions of higher learning. I got the impression it's more than willing. They are quite keen. They are encouraging. So I don't know if keen is a good enough word to describe the attitude that I, or the impression I got from their approach to this, but it was really my impression that they want to almost make higher education an export product of this, and they would like. And then the second, the paragraph just thereafter, 392, something which I observed which really struck me, and I came back with a favorable opinion of that, and that was the issue of specialized universities, which is mentioned there, and I appreciate that. I was just wondering, it says here, specialized universities established to provide critical scarce skills to respond to the economic needs of the country and specific regions. I had the impression that it had more to do with certain economic sectors. And I was just wondering whether mentioning, for example, specializing in topics such as power or transport. Those were the two which we report on. But I found that a very interesting concept, where you have, almost like here in South Africa, we have a university specializing in medical care, that they also expanded that to other fields. So if it would carry the committee's support, I would propose that we say that to respond to economic needs of the country and, let's say, and specific sectors such as transport and power. Thank you.
I think instead of just saying the two, I think it was across was more than transport and power. It was, I think we could say, in a range of different sectors. Honourable members, a response to Honourable Van der Westhuizen's point? Honourable Mavunda?
Yeah, Chair, I think it's correct. Like you said, across the area of trade. I think that you mentioned that word, that which attracted him the most. I think it's correct there, just to say across, because I can mention
are we happy with that? All right. I thought that you would make an example, Honourable Van der Westhuizen, such as ballet. You know? Anyway. All right. Page 20.
I didn't personally observe
okay.
That it was taught at a university level in the USSR. As a matter of fact, Chair, if I may, I came back because, you know, I have got a particular interest in our Tibet sector, and I somehow, when we even went to those institutions where I was expecting to learn more about their Tibet sector, it seemed to me it was more at tertiary level. And so for me there's still a gap. I still don't know what they do to train their plumbers and their electricians and their car mechanics and graphic designers and so on.
And it really had to do, Honourable Van der Westhuizen, with the fact that we were not able to get confirmation. You remember they cancelled. So it really had to do that, and they spent a lot of time in really letting us go to most of these universities. So I think that was the problem. But there's nothing wrong to say that you know, we have not been able to be exposed to that. So the other observations are on page 28, and then we make another summary, Honourable Members. You're not happy with the summary, but we summarize, condensed it into something. And then we carry on with the recommendations. I thought that what we must say also under recommendations is how we relate it to South Africa as it relates to a discussion with the department. That's what I mean. You know what's going to happen. The report is going to come here. The report is here. Then the report will go to the National Assembly. But somewhere in here, we have to say something that... I remember the members were picking up on the science and maths thing quite a bit after we came back. I think that we have not sufficiently covered that aspect in ensuring that we can have a conversation with or refer some of the things to the department. Remember we had the Free State people, we had another group of students. Those things must be referred to the department to take up. So I'm saying that element is a bit missing under the recommendations. A range of those things that must be for the attention of the department. Also the one that is for the attention of the department is the one where the embassy felt that in the embassy itself there needs to be a little bit more attention to, what did they call it? not an ambassador. They call it, there was a name that they used, attaché, the attaché. They wanted an attaché on education, in particular because this program is part of the BRICS. Those things must be referred to the department. And so I'm saying that's missing. It's missing in here. Because it must be taken up. We can't have people just taking students out of the country and then they don't adhere to what they're supposed to. The provinces are not, they don't have, it's not a concurrent, higher education is not concurrent. We can't be taking those decisions.
Chair, can I just say, I didn't attend that reading with the written of it's absolutely shocking what happened to those students, that they were sent to China, learnt Chinese,
taken away from China, sent to Russia, and now they're learning Russian in order to complete their medical degrees. It seems to me that is almost an abusive treatment of young people, maybe arising from a carelessness about what kind of course was on offer in China and how it was not adequate. So is there any, I don't know whether the department can fix that or whether we need to refer it to the Free State government for a response. Although the people that you met there were the Free State government. But is there no way in which we can express some sort of concern about the way those students were treated? And the cavalier way in which provinces seem to send students, you know, any old place, without thinking about whether the degree is valid or not. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you all discussed that already, but it was just something that reading the minute myself, I found very worrying.
My contention is, remember, honourable members, we had the Department International before this committee. Over there on the MCLP side, they did a presentation to us. What I'm asking for to change in here is to conform it to that. Let us not further get into giving the provinces powers that they don't have. That's my issue. So I think we can't abdicated to the select committee. It is the portfolio committee on higher education has observed in their visit to Russia that this is happening, and my view is there is no concurrence in higher education. So you cannot take a decision that is not in the, what is this thing, in the constitution, in particular the section that deals with concurrence, and then allow the provinces. That's the premise that we must move from, I'm arguing, as it relates to higher education and training. And I think we would, on Honourable Bazzoli's point, there would be nothing wrong for us to direct a letter to the premier of the province, of that province, two provinces, and expressing it from all of these points that we are talking about, the Constitution and so on, and say that we would want this matter to be addressed in the way that we have discussed it here, and at the same time we will say that to the department. We should hold the department accountable to the fact that they make sure that the provinces just don't decide that they, where do they get the money from to spend on higher education? It's not in there. See, this is my worry. So that's why I'm saying we need to. Exactly. And then my last thing that I want to say is we have to say something that it can't be automatic that you put the burden onto the embassy. And that's really what they told us. They have to shoulder the burden of decisions that people take elsewhere. And then they need to fork out money that they don't have, which is not allocated on the formularies to them, of having to deal with the students. That doesn't mean that the committee is saying we should not have students going to any country, but it's the how that has been done on the West Asia.
Thank you, Chair. I'm fully in support of that idea. Can I just say, I've got three points. The first one is I'm just wondering whether the Department of Higher Education and Training shouldn't be developing a protocol for government structures, institutions that would like to support students for studying abroad, you know, giving financial support to them, such as, you know, have you liaised with the professional bodies? Will they accept, you know, these students when they come back with an engineering or medical degree or a law degree, etc., which they've gained overseas? So the first one is the possibility of the DHET developing a protocol for publicly funded initiatives to send students abroad. The second one is the whether we shouldn't have a study done by the DHET again, or one of its bodies that we report to it, on the cost effectiveness of a foreign study at an undergraduate level. I'm concerned that even if we have used taxpayers' money to support a private initiative in South Africa to train students at undergraduate level, that the gains may have been more than what we currently are getting. I'm not sure if it's the best use of public money.
Just repeat, I didn't follow that about the private.
Okay, no. The point I'm making is that a study should be done on the cost effectiveness of foreign study at undergraduate level as compared to local training institutions. And I'm not only saying public local training institutions, but if we can train a person in South Africa better for less money than what is currently, because there's a year that's being used just to, you know, master the language there. There's obviously the not insignificant costs of travel there and back. There's the whole cost of the South African foreign currencies that quite often, you know, change, and that's unpredicted, so you must either take out insurance. So I just think that the Department of Higher Education, if we don't have the capacity at our public colleges, public institutions, to train people, shouldn't we then be even looking at building capacity then at private institutions in South Africa? But we must look at the best buck for our rand. We must look at, you know, or best bang for our buck. And the Department of Higher Education, I believe, should do such a study so that we can give guidance. If the Free State University says we've got fantastic young people that are of a standard where they should be able to study for as medical doctors, but they just that, and we have a scarcity of health professionals in South Africa, and you know, we've got the money, we've got the need in our public hospitals, provincial hospitals, but we can't get them into the South African universities. You know,
is the only alternative option then to send them abroad? Or would that alternative option be in South Africa to say, well, can't we use that same money to set up, for example, then a private medical school in South Africa? But those studies, it's more about the studies. I'm not saying we must go that way. I just believe that we should, the DHET should be giving guidance to provinces, etc., that want to support such initiatives. And that at this point in time, my impression is there's a lack of that kind of cooperation, of leadership by DHET in assisting provinces with their good intentions.
That's actually the other way around. And that is, there's a lack of the provinces to consult with DHET on the plans that they are making on sending students abroad. And I think that's our contention. I think what we should maybe do, honourable members, is I think as part of this report we can say that we wish to invite the department, whether it's international section or whatever, we invite the department to come and brief us on the agreements, because there are country agreements on this thing. You know, this agreement between the continent and the country and South Africa, this agreement in the BRICS countries, there is an agreement. There's an agreement with various countries on student exchange. And I think maybe it would be best for us to get familiar with what are the contents of these agreements and how does it work. But I think on the provinces, I'm saying it's the other way around. We should say in here that we have observed the fact that the provinces do not confer with the Department of Higher Education when they decide to send students, and that our preference is that these things need to be dealt with by the Department of Higher Education as opposed to provinces taking a decision all by themselves to do whatever, and then that must be linked to obviously the objective. You can't send people to be trained in whatever country to all become filmmakers. But when you're not going to make one film in the country, just an example, it's not that they are all filmmakers, this is an example. It must be linked to the objectives of our own skills development in the country also. On your point that you're making, Honourable Van der Westhuizen, we should maybe say in our report also that we confer with the Committee on Health as well as the Department on Health so that they can tell us a little bit more, because those students that we were talking about, there were a number of them that were part of the health students, the Chinese one, I'm correct, Mampapa. It came from a conversation with the Department of Health also. I think it would be best for us to get better information from health also on how they're doing it. You can't send people to China and then you discover some people don't allow you to do tests on human bodies. Then there you discover that it is okay sent to Russia. I think there's nothing wrong for us to observe all of that and say, and therefore we would want all of them to come and have this discussion with us.
Thank you, Chair. I go with you what you've said. Can I just, and my last one would be that that South African professional bodies, that South African professional bodies be consulted and approval gained from them that the foreign qualifications would be recognized when students go abroad to study. And I'm referring here to professional bodies like the medical and dental profession, the accountants, engineers, the veterinary, I don't know if there's a veterinary council, but my impression was that, you know, the recognition by these local bodies for students that have qualified abroad needs to be clarified before public funds is spent on foreign study. Thank you.
all of that, I think, is important. Before any student leaves the shores of South Africa, they need to be sure what they're going to study when they get there. We need to see how it will benefit the country. And then whether it is conferring with the quality councils or whoever else, all of those things need to be informed of before they leave. So we want to see the entire plan for everyone, which is the part of the entities. Honourable Mavunda.
Thanks, Chair. One other observation which I observed is with regards to the training on agriculture. Your animal husbandry, and that there are some other animals which are not found in Russia, for instance. And, for instance, your buffaloes are not there, and they are contributing immensely to the foot and mouth diseases in South Africa, especially in the former transfer boundaries. So, like Honorable Van der Veste was saying, I think we need also to bring on board different departments even before the recommendation for the student to go abroad, to say, are they going to study what will beneficiate our own country, and also the area in which those students are coming from, because you can't go to Russia, for instance, and study veterinarians for things that you do not even have an access to. For instance, a student from Limpopo going out to train on how to fix a sheep. There is no sea in Limpopo. So I think we have to align our profession in relation to where we come from, what are the contributions we want to make in terms of economic growing of economy in our country. Thanks, Chair.
Anyone else? Bezoli?
Would it be proper for us to raise the question of the use of provincial funding, which is paid for, you know, which is part of the amount given to provinces to spend on provincial matters, to raise the question of how it is that provincial funding is used to fund students studying medicine overseas, which is not really what provincial funding is designated for? Is that not outside of the remit of a province, or is it within the remit of a province? It's just something that does worry me. And in fact, I've had a couple of letters from Mpumalanga residents asking how it came to be that their provincial money was being used to fund overseas students when there were all sorts of things in Mpumalanga that should be being done provincially, like education and looking after hospitals and clinics, or hospitals, that weren't being done. So is it appropriate for us to raise that point? Because it is a concern for me.
It is not only that, Honourable Bezoli. We have to say, I don't think I've seen this point, we have to say that we have observed that provinces are using what? Private companies recruitment agencies to be doing that also. So we add that point to the issue that you are raising. There's nothing wrong in asking what you are asking, because we still make the point that higher education is a national competence, and therefore a conversation must be held with higher education. And so the following points we wish to point out. Added to what Mavunda has said, we talk about the financing thing, we talk about the private companies, recruiting companies, and it is this company that has dumped the students there. I'm very angry about this thing. It is them that dumped the students there. Remember the ones that we couldn't visit? It was just too far away for us. Australia. Yeah. We mention it here in the report. So I think there will be nothing wrong to say that. It is how we can. We'll do a little bit of research around the points that we raise as it relates to the legislation and so on how these things are governed. But I saw somebody else's hand before yours on the Bafana West Station, Kekana.
Yes, yeah,
I agree with all the issues that are raised, but I also saying all of us must remember that first of all, individuals have their rights in the constitution, the right of freedom of association. The situation right now is you can't confine people to their province if they want to move out, even within South Africa. Actually, we're complaining that a lot of doctors from Limpopo qualify there, but they use that as an opportunity to come and live in Johannesburg because they think it is more opportune and they'll flourish in Johannesburg than Limpopo. It's very important to develop, and I accept the rural areas. But while we're doing that, we should be careful that we don't overload the department with that type of work, because I'd rather go with those appropriate associations that do accreditation, engineering, medical council, all of them, to do it, because you can see that the department is in a sense overloaded. So if you give them more students nationally to check and do, I wonder whether they will do it appropriately. So I'm saying two things. Yes, we should develop, try and encourage the students to go back to their rural areas, but it must also allow movement if they want to move, because that is entrenched in the constitution for individual rights.
No, Honourable Member, I think you maybe have it the wrong end of the stick here. The point we are making is that the Constitution says that higher education and training is a national competence. And there are particular legislation that speak to the conversation between higher education and the provinces. You don't have a MINMEC, for example, in higher education. There's no MINMEC, because it's not a provincial competence. So the point that we are making is, on what basis would they spend money for a national competence? And secondly, on what basis do they not see it fit not to confer with the national department when those decisions are taken? We are not taking away any rights of any student to go and educate themselves wherever they want to. Ours is a responsibility in making sure that the monies that we appropriate when we do so, that it is done in accordance with. That's the only point that we are making. We are extremely then concerned when we get to Russia to see a group of students who are confused about why they are there, that then overburden the embassy with the fact that they had to pay for people that got sick, they had to pay for people that didn't have accommodation money, they had to pay for transporting people, and that can't be a competence that the provinces have then decided. What they can do is they are always in the best position to say, we think from our province the 50 students must come from here, there and so on, because it's their province, they know the people very well. But in conjunction with, that's the only point that we are making, Honourable Kekana, and I don't think it can't be the other way around. Honourable Van der Veste, and then was up and then in Global.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I'm just concerned that we might be creating the impression that we are against potential employers having bursary schemes for future employees. If a provincial administration would like to give bursaries to deserving students in the medical field, in teaching, for architects and so on, I almost want to say I will even further encourage them to that. As a matter of fact, I have been perturbed in the past by the small number of bursaries made available by certain provincial administrations to assist students with further study, because it's often an excellent way for provinces to attract students, future employees, whom they can then ask and say, but please, will you go and work in Mthatha, or will you go and work in Ntunu, or, you know, Kunu, where quite often, if students fund themselves and so on, they would not be willing to go and work. So as long as we don't send out a message that provinces may not give bursaries or enter into bursary agreements with students and potential future employees, I can go along with this. But I'm really concerned that we are actually now saying provinces do not fund training at all. And that is not the message that I would like this committee to send out. Thank you.
That provinces don't?
I'm concerned that we say provinces should back off and don't fund bursary schemes for students. I want to encourage provinces to support study, but then it must be through bursary schemes where you support the student for 4 years and the student come back and is obliged to work for you for 4 years, etc. And then it allows, and not only provinces, private sector as well. I ESCOM, all of those, over all these years, they have made a huge contribution to funding training. And I think that must continue. We must not send out a message that we are not encouraging provinces to fund training. But then it must be under bursary schemes. People must then come back and be obliged to enter into an agreement, an employment agreement with the province.
No, I don't think we are in disagreement with each other on that. We're certainly not moving into the direction that you are concerned about. Our concern, I say, is we observed that when we went to Russia, we had the conversation with the Free State people, but we also were contacted by other students because of everything else that we have said earlier. And we said that what must be correct is that there must be a conversation with higher education and training. And if private people want to do whatever, we can't run after their money. We are concerned with whatever it is that we pay from our coffers, that it will be in the best interest of the country, that there needs to be a much more coordinated way in how this is all being done, as opposed to what we have observed there. And that's why we're asking the department to come and brief us on how the entire thing is, so that we don't take a decision not having been given sufficient information on how it actually are being done. I'm saying also that the department is also not happy about the fact, as well as international relations, that where people don't coordinate themselves properly, they must then foot the bill. And that obviously can't be the case. Are there anything else, Honourable Mavunda, and then we can come to conclusion on the report?
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think that which you have just said, my understanding is that with regard to offering bursaries and scholarships and so on.
Scholarship, yeah.
There is this called public-private partnership. I think there is no exclusion of a certain sector which is ready to assist in financing a student or any development. Because the understanding is that once the private is on board trying to assist students, it's also assisting government, because students are future leaders in our country. So both private and public should come together and forge a society that will be, you know, developed in the near future. Because even whether the private will be will be far in terms of coming together. After all, they are part of the country, and the more they develop. I mean, the more they fund students, it means they want our future leaders to be educated. It is better to run the country when you have got more educated people than to have poor people who do not even understand what is all about development and stuff like that. So I'm just saying that is how I understand it.
Global.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Maybe what I'm going to say might not be direct to the trail, but I'd like to just to make a contribution from where you started the story. In terms of my understanding, when I have a look or when I check the Constitution speaks of intergovernmental relations and cooperative governance. Now, after the tour, you have realized that there are challenges in terms of the students that are there. Now, when we are to plan, maybe we should consider also bringing in the other committees, like your international relations. Why do I say so? Because now, if we work as the Committee for Higher Education in silos, we will definitely encounter those challenges. But if we bring in international, intergovernmental relations in, we will be able to decentralize. Now, when we decentralize, the municipalities will also come in, your provincial government will come in, then it is the national government. Because now, if we are saying there's a challenge amongst the students in terms of who must foot the bill or who must
give out to the bazaaries. At municipal level, if we engage them, they will come up with something from their budgets to say, we are seated under one roof, it is the three spheres of government, how do we in future see or how do we plan for a certain group of students being the three spheres of government. I don't know as to whether what I'm saying makes sense.
Now we hear what you are saying, honorable member. So my only response is, let's allow the department to come and clarify to us much more so that we take a decision, as I said earlier, on an informed basis on how the entire program is. Honorable members, can I ask, are there anything else in the report or with all the additions that you have made that we move the adoption of the report, Honorable Kekana?
Chair, before you leave this point, just quickly, I think what you want to emphasize is to say to them the way they are doing it, it isn't proper. This has been said already. And we think that, I mean, we have long accepted that we can't develop, we can't educate unless we include private sector, unless private sector also plays a role. It doesn't just leave the education to government and say you have taxes, you have money, do it alone. If it is a collective thing by all of us, all structures, especially private sector that specializes with developing the economy, we think we'll educate our people better, we'll have a better South Africa. So what we're saying is that all that effort must be coordinated, because for now it isn't properly coordinated. We must tell them that.
Yep.
They might think they are doing it the best they can, but our experience outside is that it isn't properly done. It needs to be improved.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Can we move on the report? Honourable
Mornaland,
you were not there.
Yes, that's actually the point I want to make. I see, having not been part and parcel of the trip, but having had the advantage of reading it now, firstly, it's a good read. Secondly, it deals with a lot of issues that we have dealt with before. Questions and observations are quite, even if I was not there, I would ask the same. What were our kids doing there without the proper coordination, without the proper articulation with the other bodies? And what we are resolving in as far as the discussion is concerned, to get all the departments that are relevant to come and brief us, suffice for me to say I accept the report and move for us to adopt it, and with those reasons as well.
Unfortunately, procedurally you can't. There's a nice chance. You have to talk to the two members next to you, on your left or on your right. Honourable Mavunda, are you happy with the report?
I didn't attend quite a lot of the sessions.
Between three of you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the report with a little bit of amendment, which Honorable Bozoli indicated some of the...
Both of them?
Yeah, so I think...
all of you made additions.
Yeah, we made some additions, with additions, Chairperson. Thanks.
Yeah. From the base station.
Thank you, Chair. I can confirm that we've been in Russia and that this report is a fair reflection of our visit and observations, and I would therefore second the proposal that this be adopted as amended. Thank you.
Are there anyone that feels otherwise? Got a violent objection to those two members' proposals and seconders? You are protected, Honourable Wolmeren. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. We are done with minutes and we are done with reports. Honourable Members, as I said earlier on, at the beginning of the meeting, I said that a letter was referred to the committee. I just checked with the secretary. The letter did not go to all the members. So, if you don't mind, I can read you the letter that came from the public protector. You would remember, Honourable Members, there was one college, the Tshwane South College. You would remember there was lots of hype around this aspect. I'm just double checking. I think the president also did a proclamation for an investigation into the Tshwane College. Now the letter that came from the acting speaker says that the public protector, regarding the non-compliance with the public protector's remedial action by the Department of Higher Education relating to its failure to implement the recommendations of the report on the investigations into allegations of procurement irregularities, maladministration, nepotism, victimization, and corruption at this particular college. The public protector's letters hereby refer to the committee for consideration and report. In the letter to the speaker, the public protector speaks about the implementation of remedial actions and everything else I read earlier on. And then the public protector goes into the report of 2017-18 issued in terms of all the sections in the Constitution. She refers to that, and then she then says a year ago she issued the report with binding remedial action, however it has not been implemented by the Department of Education. She then continues to say that she's now escalating this matter in terms of Section 55 of the Constitution to the National Assembly to exercise its oversight over the state organ for non-compliance with the implementation of her report. And then she acknowledges that the department, this is Higher Education and Training, has instituted a judicial review against her report. And then she goes and quote a number of cases that were before the court, other cases. And on the strength of those other cases, then say that remedial action by the public protector of the Constitution is binding and shall be implemented unless it is set aside by the court of law, the constitutional, and everything else that the constitutional court says in that regard. And then she continues to say, in the light of the aforementioned judgment, the department is expected to implement the remedial action despite the application for judicial review. And then according to her record, she says the court has not set aside the implementation of the remedial action, hence queries relating to the implementation of the remedial action against the department persist. And she continues to say that to this end, she has forwarded a number of letters to the department urging the minister to implement the remedial action in compliance with the Constitutional Court judgment that she refers to, which she bases her strength on why she's sending it to us. It is against this background that I am approaching you as the Speaker of the National Assembly for your intervention to assist me to ensure that the department complies with her report accordingly, should there be any challenges regarding the implementation of the aforesaid remedial action. I will be available, she will be available to engage probably with the Speaker relating the aspects of the implementation of the report. A response within 10 working days upon receipt of this letter would be highly appreciated. Now this was just sent to us, nothing else was told, whether the Speaker's office had any engagement with the public protector. This letter came very late yesterday, so we ask there in the Speaker's office, there is somebody that deals just with entities. He was here earlier on, but then they had to leave. And he said he wanted to come, he will come back. The DG said he's around and he will come. And the reason why we ask that they must come so that we can get clarification from them on this matter. So that is Kaya that is coming in. Sweeney is his surname. And he deals with entities. So the reason why we've asked him to come and the department is to clarify to us the following, honourable members. It appears from the letter that this matter has not been finalised in the court and that the parties, that the department has taken this matter on review. Now, so we wanted the department, the DG, to clarify to us that aspect. Is it that they don't want to implement the remedy given by the public protector, or is their view that they are taking the matter on review and have therefore not implemented that? And then the what Parliament what Mr. Zweni must tell us is, remember we are different arms of the state. So when the one arm of the state has been approached, i.e. to review a decision, then on what basis do you then ask another arm of the state, in this instance Parliament, to then say, we will now take a decision, you know, whatever decision it is we take. And then secondly to that, whatever the committee decides upon, the firstly Parliament is rising, and as far as a decision is concerned, because they want an answer in 10 days, now I'm not sure if the 10 days is for the Speaker to answer them. Because for the Speaker to answer them, the National Assembly would have taken a decision in whichever manner, whether to report or whatever, we table as a committee to the National Assembly to take a decision which will then be conveyed to the public protector. What do we do in that instance also? But the initial question that I had was, it appears that the parties have not settled this matter finally outside, and then how do you bring this arm of the state called Parliament in when the two parties are not? And it's a legal question if the one says, look, you must implement now because the court said whatever about the cases, and therefore you must implement now, and I don't know if I can say and say you can talk later if the court has said something different. I think we can't be put into the middle of what is that. I mean, that's really
the legal advice of what exactly is expected from Parliament, i.e. in the portfolio committee, in doing that. The merits of the case, honourable members, I'm not getting into, because the merits is obvious. The merits of the case, I don't think we would dispute the merits of the case of, I mean, if they've done irregularities and so on. There needs to be consequence management and action that needs to be taken and so on what it, on whatever. I think it's only those are my initial queries that I have on the matter. Are there anything else, honourable members, that you wish to ask at this stage? Because I'm just on the procedural part at the moment. Yeah. Would you want to respond?
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, honourable chair. Thank you, honourable chair, for inviting us to share some clarity on this matter. Chair, I think you were spot on when you indicated that this is a legal question. Indeed, it's a legal question that the Constitutional Court has pronounced on. If you have the letter from the Public Protector, it's quoted at paragraph 4 of the letter, wherein it said, in fact, the Constitutional Court concluded that the remedial action by the Public Protector is binding, one. However, it can be taken on review, judicial review, two. Three, I'm trying to paraphrase so that it's a bit clear. Three, taking the matter on review does not necessarily have the effect of stopping the respondents to implement the decision. That's the basis. It's only when the court has set aside the decision of the Public Protector that it then means you cannot abide by it. It's no longer binding on you. So in this instance, the Public Protector is saying it's more than a year now since I communicated to you the remedial action that must be taken and implemented. Yes, I've been advised that you have taken a decision to take the matter on judicial review, but that is not to say in the meantime you are not supposed to implement. Hence he is quoting at paragraph 4 the decision of the court that unless it is set aside. At this stage, it has not been set aside. I think even paragraph 6 even goes on to say, according to their records, the court has not set aside the implementation of the remedial action. Hence, queries relating to the implementation of this remedial action. So now is escalating, escalating the matter now to Parliament. And that is also according to the Constitution. Parliament has an obligation to support these institutions, all Chapter 9 institutions, in terms of ensuring that they are given effect to their remedial action or what you call some of them, they don't take remedial action, they recommend, yes, remedial action or recommendation. That's why he's saying, I'm asking the Speaker to intervene because the Department is not doing anything about this matter. So, as Chair would know, the Portfolio Committee is the vehicle through which Parliament functions. Hence, the Speaker has decided that let me bring this matter to the Portfolio Committee so that the Portfolio Committee can exercise its oversight responsibility towards the Department. Maybe if the Portfolio Committee feels that they should call the Department and find out where is the matter, at what stage is it, if it's before the court, and what are they doing in the meantime in terms of complying with the remedial action that is binding. I think, Chair, that's where the matter is, and that's why it has been referred to this committee. The 10 days, ma'am, is the 10 days that the Speaker must comply with in response to the Public Protector on receipt of this letter in terms of what has the Speaker done with this letter
And the speaker has already indicated or returned back to the public to say, I've referred the matter to my portfolio committee so that it can consider and take it forward. Thank you.
Us that must. It is the speaker because it was written to the speaker. And did you have any other engagement with the public protector?
No, we don't. Other than the one that says we have received your letter and we have tabled and referred it to the portfolio for processing. That's the only engagement.
Okay. Honourable members, any questions you wish to put to the speaker's office? Bazzoli?
Chair, first of all, without a copy of this, we can't really comment in an informed manner. So I believe we all need a copy urgently. Secondly, what is the essence of what it is that is not being done? How many recommendations are there? What is the key recommendation? What is it that is not being done? Because it would be easier for us to respond if there were a couple of things or a handful of things that need to be done urgently and that we can therefore put pressure on the college to actually do them rather than just talk about the report and the recommendations. Actually say, well, look, the report says you must fire Mr. X, go and fire him. The report says, you know, so that we can get down to actual factual, real issues and push on those. Thank you.
Did you get any of that? You didn't get the actual report and all of it.
Remember, we can, in fact, let me start by saying, also when we got this letter, we tried to find out whether this report was ever tabled in Parliament. It was not. And as members would know, not all the reports have protected our tables in Parliament. So I take the point that we must get a copy of this report so that the committee is finished with all the information. We will do that.
Any other question? So, honourable members, it is obvious that the Audi Outrum Batum must apply. And that is, we need to get the view of the department also in order for us to take an informed decision. We need to be supplied with sufficient information from the different parties to the dispute. I get the impression it is not, Honourable Bazzoli, it is not the college that must implement remedial action. It's the department that the public protector is referring to. But I think in order for the committee to take an informed decision, we must be the speaker's office. So the decision we're taking is we're saying to the speaker's office, we have received the letter. Thank you very much. However, the committee wish to be provided with sufficient information in order to take an informed decision, and that sufficient information would include one, that we call the department before us to hear from their side as it relates to this matter, and secondly, we have only received a letter from the speaker telling us about the public protector. We have not received or the public protector's report has not been referred to the committee, and we think it will be proper for the committee to take a decision based on sufficient information in order to respond to the question that the speaker has put to us. Now from there, the speaker can ask the public protector, look, if you want me to intervene, I don't know what it is that you're talking about. Can you provide me with this, that, and the other, and so on? Because our view is, it is not just I have given a remedial action and you must implement. It is give us the entire story. So can I find out, would we be on the right track to take that route?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes, Chair. I think it's fair that you get the report, familiarize yourself with it, and then be able to engage the Audi role, engage the department, so that also you hear their side.
Yeah.
Yes, and then based on that, the committee can take a decision forward.
And that the committee will deal with this matter when it returns back to Parliament again in the next term. Are we comfortable with that, Honourable Members? Is there anything else, Honourable Bazzoli?
Quickly looking on the internet, there's lots on the report. And what it seems to recommend is that a whole lot of people who were fired should be reinstated. And I think that's why the department's taking them on review. And it would probably not, I don't understand why the public protector says it must be implemented anyway while it's on review. So in other words, they must reinstate these people, and then the court says, no, you mustn't reinstate the people. So there's a rather odd situation here, where the public protector seems to be demanding the implementation of a report that shouldn't be implemented while it's on review. That's what I gather from a quick search. So should we not be writing back to the public protector saying, what are you talking about? I mean, what do you mean? What do you mean it should be implemented in the meantime? I mean, is she not talking something not acceptable?
Yes. No, Honourable Members, that's why I'm saying for the committee to be safe, we go the Audi out from the Audi part on the route, and that is we must hear both sides of the story. And that's why the Speaker has referred this back to us, and we ask the Speaker all of these questions, because remember she wrote to the Speaker. The Speaker decided to refer to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. And the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training has now looked at this letter, and we've got more questions that we are asking. Now, we will not, Honourable Members, say that on the basis of us searching on the web, the following, it will be better that we be provided with the sufficient information to be doing all of this. Because I can also tell you I have seen some things. And I'm also asking in my own head. Now, if there has been misdemeanor and the department says no, I'm not going to let Bazzoli come back again because these are the issues against them. Example, man. And then, now, I mean, this is, it's on the basis of picking this up on the corridor. It's not correct for me and then just to say, I have to hear. The department might be wrong in what they are doing and why they have taken this particular decision that they feel they're not going to pay these people to come back, because remember, if you reinstate somebody, you must pay. You must go back, and you must pay from that particular date, and then all of you must then say, "Well, you give that money. Will you agree that the department must spend all of that money to go back?" And so, if we are comfortable, Honourable Members, in the summary that I've given, that we leave it at that, and that we will formally write to the Speaker. We do not expect you to. To be our messenger. We will formally write to the Speaker and say that this is the decision that the committee has taken, and then we refer, and then of course from there we will do a little bit more. All right. Is that okay, Honourable Members? Let's leave the public. Can we ask the DG to come in, and then we just tell him the decision that we have taken? Thank you, DG, for coming from your meeting where you were. we have we have just read the letter that the speaker referred to us, that were referred to the speaker from the public protector, as it relates to the remedial action of the that the public protector has given the Department of Higher Education and Training. We have said that what we would like to do is the following. The first one is the Audi out Rampartan is important, and that is we must hear from the department their side of the story also in order to take an informed decision. The second thing we said is we only have a letter that came from the speaker of which the public protector sent. In that letter, we are not provided with more information that says, you know, this is the nature of the case and this is whatever. Honorable Pazoli decided to search there on the web and then says this is what she sees is the case, and then she had questions already just on what she said. We said it will be best for us, DG, to be provided with sufficient information to see the quantum of everything. And then we write back to the speaker to say that we think it is best that we hear the side of the department. Secondly, the information in the letter is not sufficient for us just to take a decision that, you know, the remedial action. But we have asked legal questions also that what you ask Parliament to do in this entire thing, because the public protector quotes the cases that were in the court on how the decision came about when the DA and when the EFF went to court to allow the public protector to be empowered for her remedial action of, you know, whatever nature to be implemented. And then the question that arises is, the department has taken this thing on review, and that is there. Now, he then explained to us that it's taken, you have taken it on review, but according to that court ruling, you have to implement the remedial action, notwithstanding the fact that you're taking it on review. We then said, in order for us to know what it is that they are talking about, we don't know what you are talking about, we don't know what the issue is, what the case is, and so on, we would ask the speaker to write back to the public protector and ask all of these questions that we are asking, and that the committee will deal with this matter when it comes back next term, and that we deal procedurally on that basis. That's sort of where we have left things. I'm very happy that you decided to leave your meeting and come here and so on. I think the committee is appreciative. And I'm not sure if there's anything that you wish to say.
No, thanks. This matter, it's contextual, historical, and factual in terms of the legal standing of it. The historical part, when Tshwane South Tivet College was still under the administration of Gauteng Education Department, there was a case of corruption that was brought to the attention of the Gauteng Provincial Department by a group of lecturers, and the principal was suspended. Investigations were conducted. Upon the outcomes of the investigations, the Gauteng Education Department sought two legal opinions in respect to what they should be doing with the report. And the legal opinions that they got, we are told, didn't find anything untoward done by the principal. and the principal was then allowed to come back to the college. When the principal came back to the college, a group of lecturers stoned and vandalized the college property, including cars. A criminal case was opened. Court hearings proceeded, and those lecturers were found guilty in terms of the criminal acts they were alleged to have committed. That's correct. After that judgment, the college instituted disciplinary inquiry processes, and those lecturers were dismissed. So when we came in as the DHET, that matter was brought to our attention as though there has never been any process, including legal process, that has made a determination on the matter. When we're looking into the matter, we found that the matter was dealt with and it was closed in respect to those allegations that were leveled against the principal. And the recourse was actually pursued and concluded in the court of law and also within the disciplinary inquiry processes of the college. But these lecturers continued up to public protector. Then the public protector, in its findings, instructed the department to reinstate those lecturers. Now, when we subjected it to our legal services, they're saying, no, the public protector has erred on this matter because we are not and we're not the employer of those lecturers. They were under the provincial administration and the college. And therefore, if there is any recourse sought on this matter, is a matter that the college, because these are their employees, they must deal with. So in that aspect, we are advised to take the findings and the recommendations of the public protector for a review, my apology, for a review, of which we have done. And the matter now is waiting to be heard in the court. As a department, we have done all what we're supposed to have done. They are saying is waiting for OPP to make a determination of the court appearance. I understand, even the college itself, the legal fundis would know that. The college, we understand, has also taken the public protector's review, findings and recommendations for a review. So we can't do anything until the review is heard and the judgment is pronounced. That's where the matter is. But as you have indicated earlier on in respect to the decision that we have taken, Chair, as this committee will provide the information. I've already instructed the officials in the department, in the legal services, to construct briefing notes for the minister, of which the minister would then engage this noble house. That's my understanding of the matter.
Notwithstanding what the DG said, we still stick to our summary that we gave. The only amendment is that we will, of course, ask the minister also to come before us, and then all of these other people to provide us with all this information, and that the same would be communicated to the speaker unless you feel otherwise on the basis of what the DG said. No?
No, let's leave it then like that. Thank you, honourable members, and thank you, Mr. Sweeney, and your advisor. for coming along also. And honourable members, I have absolutely no other reason to keep you here. If you insist to want to stay here, it's fine. Yes.
Yes, thank you. Before you dismiss us.
And you may take leave if you want. And DG, you may take leave also if you want.
Oh, thank you very much. I came specifically.
What is it?
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Can I say comes from my heart. Say thank you very much for leading this committee, also in this year, the way you've done it. Obviously we've differed, and we've differed often, but I think that is one of the great things that we can, and that you allow us to differ. Obviously it's our right, but the way in which you so often have to deal with this. And I want to say to my colleagues as well, I wish you all a festive season. I hope you will all have a restful time. And coming to these committees is really, for me, one of those events in a week that I look forward to. I learn a lot. I hope we can contribute a lot. And I hope to see you all in the new year. So what I'm asking is, please be safe.
Honourable Kekana is now forced to respond. The right to reply.
No, thanks, Chair. She set the standard, so we thank you first for your leadership, and we also very, very humbled by the interaction of different parties. It's not easy in the new South Africa that we are all in, where we're building our democracy. But we really have enjoyed interacting with each other, being people who come from diverse backgrounds. But you could see the commitment that all of us love our country, love our children, and would want them to grow in a peaceful, equal, and just system. So for that system that we're building, we are all very grateful. And keep up the good work. Enjoy your Christmas with your children and family, and see you next year. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kekana.
This committee is really blessed with the most amazing staff as well. And really, I want to thank the committee secretary and the content advisor and all the others who've over time, and our committee, what are you called? Assistants. Over the years have worked so well with us. Thank you.
Members, from my side, I must thank you, because the committee cannot function without members. And this is one of the few committees where we do not battle a quorum, where you are regularly here, and that and yes, honourable members, the committee is made up of robust debate, but that's who we are about, and that's our duty. And I express my appreciation to you also for ensuring that you are always here and that you read the documents, you engage with the people. And there are many times that you say thank you, and you say and you give praise to people when they appear here and they've done what the committee has asked you to do. And so I think that helps the entities and the department very much in knowing that they deal with a committee that will give them a rough time when they have not come to the party, but equally so that the committee has the courage to say
that well done, you're taking us into the right direction. Of course, there are challenges. There are many of them. We have to, in the new year, up our game on the TVET colleges. We have to get things right there. We also hope, honourable members, and we'll see how we can do this. We probably have to just see how we can work out the program for the opening of the institutions this year. NASFAS has done their best by the end of the weekend. I was informed, you would remember, NASFAS says that they had a response of 12% from the colleges. They now have almost up to 30% response from the colleges, and we think that is very good. We must say to them, well done, that they have done that. But I think we still have to do something at the beginning of the year to make sure that everything is smooth, that everything will be in place, and that we must appeal to those that would want to have funny things that they would want to do, is to take the interest of the young person into consideration and allow them to register, allow them to start their new academic year and those that return. So from my side, honourable members, it's an absolute pleasure to be in this committee. Please be safe. Spend enough time with your families also. They hardly see you when you do your trip to Cape Town. And that we come back in the new year refreshed and having rested enough, and that we continue to contribute to a bigger and better conversation as it relates to higher education and training. On that basis, yesterday we had a little thank you already to the staff, in the form of just having a little bite with them to say thank you to them. But at this level, yes, indeed, we are blessed with the fact that we have a group of staff members that are eager and willing to do the job. They are happy with the nonsense that they take from me to make sure that every Wednesday when we come here, we are a prepared committee that need to make sure that we deliver to the members in this committee. You would agree with me, honourable members, that we wish honourable Killian well. It's not easy, these operations, and when they detect whatever in your body, these things are not, they are not so happy and pleasant things, honourable member. We're happy that she came through the operation well, and that we convey our best wishes to her. We were able to get a assistant, researcher, who also then went for a big operation, and that's why you don't see her here also. So we wish her well also. We must convey that message, and that we hope that she can be back with us. She was very excited to come to the committee, and she got very excited in her first meeting. She said it's lovely to be here and, you know, energetic to do things for us. On that basis, honourable members, I'm very happy to declare this our last meeting and the end of the meeting. You almost had to come back because of a public protector, but you have protected yourself against the public protector now by taking the good decision. On that basis, honourable members, the meeting has come to an end, and thank you very much, everyone.